from the Views from the Clutch. I go by the name of Smart Alex. I'm here with my brother from another.
C. Grant, what's good?
And we return with another edition of Views from the Clutch. As always, we'd like to say thank you to our supporters, listeners, and subscribers. If you would like to join us, we are hosted on all stations where podcasts are hosted, Apple Music, Spotify, etc. Find us, give us a 5-star rating. If you would like to join us via email, you can reach us at viewsfromtheclutch@gmail.com. Tag us on social media at Views from the Clutch on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah. Oh, man. So it looks like the playoff race is really intensifying. I don't have a direct agenda to bring. I know there's a lot of things always going on in the basketball world. So scroll through the headlines. We discuss some things. But what's first and foremost on your mind since we last, you know, convened?
The biggest takeaway is just how I heard recently that they were talking about how intense the Western Conference's playing game could be and playing tournament. You know, playing games for the if the playoffs started today type setup, and that made me start thinking about how all of this could play out. Like some teams could be sent home early, and some teams could be, you know, this could be the end of current teams, you know, because like right now as we talk about, like you got the Kings that's in seventh by half a game, you got the Mavericks, who's currently playing Miami, but the Mavericks is in the eighth, Warriors in ninth, Lakers in 10th. Depending on who, if that playoff started today, the ninth and 10th, whoever loses, that team is going to look drastically different come next season. You know, so it's a matter of, in the way the setup is, if somebody gets hot, then they can get out of that, you know, because it separates six to 10 is separated by three games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then if one team, you know, starts to fall, it's a lot that can happen. And the same thing kind of with the East. I mean, I think the East obviously is not as intense, but teams like Philly and the Pacers are currently in seventh and eighth. Mm-hmm. But you got Miami and the Knicks with almost the same. That's the fifth spot, heck, the fourth spot, in the eighth spot are separated by two games. Like, that's crazy. And nobody wants to be in the eighth spot, and nobody wants to be really in the second spot. So the fourth spot is not bad, you know, but it is what it is.
Well, what makes you say nobody wants to be in the fourth spot?
No. I mean, people want to be in the fourth spot because that fourth spot is whoever you're playing is going to be an even matchup, but you like your chances versus – being in the seventh spot, and you got to play the Milwaukee, or you got to play the eighth spot, and you got to play the Bucks.
I think this is probably one of in this era of basketball, in the 2020 era of basketball, I think that this is probably going to be one of the most matchup-driven, doesn't matter what the seeds are, playoffs we've seen in a really long time. So I'm just gonna go ahead and open my
what's that you say a matchup driven, you said?
Yeah, meaning that it's not really gonna matter what your seeding position is, it's gonna matter how good you are come playoff time against the team you're playing against. Like, do you match up well against your team, that your opponent, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like one of those situations where the one seed, especially in the Western Conference, where the one seed is so clear-cut better than all of the other seven seeds beneath them that you could say they should sweep the first round. All of these teams have either a history or they have flaws that point to, if they were to lose in the first round, you can't really be totally surprised. Am I wrong or am I right?
No, like, I mean,
okay, so yeah. Like, even with what just happened. So, Carl Anthony Towns, I don't know if he's going to be out for the season, but he has a meniscus injury, right?
Yeah, so, and this is crazy to happen at this late in the season.
Right, which is he's basically dealing with, for perspective, the same injury Joel Embiid had, same kind of injury. It's meniscus related, and when your meniscus gets hurt, there's only two of three things. There's only two options that they usually go with. They either cut so that you can get back quicker, or they repair, and that takes you longer, which is typically 2 months. We're in early March. 2 months for him is May. May would be the conference semis and finals. If it's any type of standard, what I'm used to hearing about meniscus injuries. Remember, Joel Embiid, he opted for the, I think, the repair, because he's on week 6 or something like that now. So it looks like the chances of him coming back are going to be at the 8-week mark, which is typical for a meniscus repair.
Say that one more time.
So when you hurt your meniscus, they either opt to remove the piece. So a removal allows you to get back on the court quicker. A removal could be anywhere from like 2 to 3 weeks. You back on the court. That's what Chris Paul did in his New Orleans days, and that took his athleticism. That's what Dwayne Wade did when he was in Marquette when he was young, and then did it again when he played for the Miami Heat. So meniscus removal has come to proven to be the worst of the two. So most athletes who have long-term projections don't do it. When it happened,
of course,
to Westbrook,
not. Yeah.
When it happened to Westbrook, when Pat Beverly got him, he opted for, because remember, that was a playoff series where Oklahoma City didn't play until they got bumped out.
That's right.
But it happened like either right before the playoffs, or that was one of the beginning Well, it was so close to the playoffs that he was out for the rest of the season, because his return back from a full repair took longer than it did for him to get knocked out. So I'm saying all that to say, now you have Minnesota, who I've been speaking on, not really having that much confidence in them holding up if they were to secure the number one seed. But now they have every reason to not be favored in whatever first-round matchup they have. Right now, their record may allow them to hold the waters. We're talking about 20 games left for the season. So you go a little bit better than 500 with what they have, which is one of the NBA's best-rated defenses, and guys who can not replace but at least supplement and give you maybe not the same production Carl Anthony Towns is going to give you offensively, but they're better defensively or more in sync defensively, so they can hold it up. And you just tell Ant-Man, yo, you get 10 more shots. You know what I'm saying? So
they can do that.
But they can do that for now. That's the regular season. When you get to the playoffs now, you literally only have one guy on offense.
Yeah, because Mike Conley, he's not what he used to be. Rudy
Gobert.
But he's
never been a number one option. No.
What I'm saying,
it's
Ant-Man
and bust.
I know. I get that. And I'm not trying to say it's, Mike Conley's going to be miraculously turn the hands back of time and do something that he hasn't been doing ever. As being like you said, a number one option. He's more of a facilitator and stuff like that. But it's just more so to see who else is really.
So just for demonstration's sake, let's do this just for the listeners. So right now, as constructed, anticipating Carl Anthony Towns is not there for the first round.
I'm looking at the stats.
Do you see Minnesota beating the only team that I would favor in the bottom four that come from the play-in? The only teams that I favor them against without Carl Anthony Towns are the Warriors. Everybody else, I could imagine going on a heater. Dallas can take them out. You've got Luka and Kyrie. Sacramento was a top three team last year. And they, after what they did to the Lakers last night, it looks like they're starting to figure themselves out. And they're the seventh seed. Those are all possible teams that could wind up landing into the eighth spot. And then you got the Lakers with their experience. I only favor the Warriors to lose to them because the Warriors can't match up with Gobert as far as the rebounds and defense. He can nullify the easy baskets that Golden State needs to get along with their three-point shooting. He's going to take away a Kuminga getting to the rim, a Draymond Green getting to the rim, Andrew Wiggins getting to the rim, because these guys aren't that upper-tier interior scorers. These are guys who get those buckets because of the gravity of everybody else, but in the playoffs, your gravity shrinks. So Minnesota's in trouble. They're in trouble to me.
Yeah, I'm looking at their roster. I'm really looking at the fact that
I said what I said, man. You throw the ball in and hope everything goes right. That's their offense
it really has to be, because they have.
Oh, we're gonna run a pin down for Naz Reid. No, we're not.
No, I'm just saying. Yeah, but that's the thing about it. Naz Reid comes off your bench and he's your fourth leading scorer. He's 12 a game.
He's going to have to start now.
No, I know. I know that, but Rudy Gobert is at 14, and that's just all because of, you know, offensive rebounds, or, you know, it's not creating his own offense. So I'm like, yo, they really don't have anyone that can create their offense besides him. So they honestly, they've been getting over on this league, man, because Ant-Man has been that much better than a lot of people.
They have a top five defense in the league, and remember, in the regular season, Rudy Gobert is the king of top five defenses.
Yeah, no, of course, he's going to do what it takes to get the stops, like you said, and you had enough offense. You had about 50 points a game from Ant-Man and Cat. But now when you lose half of that, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. So, and it's going to be, I can't see anyone else stepping up. I can't see Naz Reid saying, okay, I'm getting 12, but now I'm going to bump that up to 18.
He can get to 18.
A game? Yeah. Because he would literally have to be 20. He, you know, forget 18. He'd have to be 22. He'd have to be at least 10 points better.
As one person,
and Ant would have to be anywhere between four to six points better.
Six,
and then you know what I mean.
Like, Ant's got to go to
30 a game.
Right,
he's got to go to 30 a game.
He's got to go to his dad MJ's mode. He's got to get in that 30 range. You got to go and be the person who everybody says you're the next version of. Yep, you got to go to MJ mode.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. No, I'm looking at it. It's going to be crazy for them. But I mean, you know, I felt that Minnesota from the beginning of the season was a little bit of a fool's gold. So I mean, that's the thing too. You're gonna have their tie with first with OKC,
But I don't think either of us had their tire blown out in the first round. Now I see them getting out of the first round as being lucky.
Oh no, that's only going to be, in my opinion, unfortunately, it might be because someone gets hurt. Another team that they're playing, their key players get hurt.
Like if you're, and that's the thing, and that's what I like about what the NBA has done with the play-in. This is one of the things about the play-in that I actually kind of like. I'm glad it's an unintended consequence. Think about how hard it is to get yourself in the eighth position. You can't strategically do it like you could before.
Oh, no, that's a fact.
So it's like, and not to say Denver did it that year that they beat the Sonics on purpose, or that the Warriors did it that year they beat Dallas on purpose, or even, Jimmy Butler and them just recently do it?
Yeah, Miami.
So I don't think those teams aimed to get themselves in it. You play your way into it now, but it's like now that eighth seed is prime real estate. If Minnesota finishes at one, it's prime real estate. Everybody now should be targeting wherever Minnesota lands. That's who you want in your first round. Because everybody says, oh, when we get to the second round, we're going to have a tough opponent no matter who it is. But if we can just get out of the first round and, you know, or have a put ourselves in a position to get to the second round, we good. That's how I think you have to look at it. Unless you're Denver. Denver has to be, yo, it's finals or bust for us because we're the defending champions. But every other team in the West, you got to be playing some sort of like, and same thing in the East, you got to be playing some chess. Like, you know that teams are targeting Cleveland. You target Cleveland because they have to prove it.
Yeah. Again, look who's at, and currently the team that's in the sixth spot that would play Cleveland in the first round is Miami, who really, Miami's the type of team where
they eat upsets for breakfast.
Yeah, that's a fact.
That might be a drill in their Heat culture. 1-2-3 upset.
Yeah, because honestly, or it could be, yeah, because they finally want to say, okay, now we're gonna play. Like, let's just do enough to be, you know, second, you know, from the lower seeded team.
We can say what we want, but they have proven through the past, since the Heatles era till now with their playoff, they're a team that their conditioning is usually better than most of their oppositions in the playoffs. They're usually the better conditioned team.
That's a fact.
For whatever style of play it is. Like, Denver didn't run them off the floor. Denver shot them off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They just Miami just did not have enough firepower to counter with, but you weren't like, oh my God, Miami can't stop them. It was just, no, Miami can't score enough to, you know?
Yeah, because yeah, Miami didn't have enough scorers. They had enough. And again, that's the thing about Miami sometimes when playoff time comes, you need certain guys to step up and just step above their what their role is. Mm-hmm. So, but again,
I think they've got that now.
Yeah, I mean, with Terry Rozier,
yeah.
If they could, if that that's a scoring person. But again, with Terry Rozier, that he's a you know he's bipolar sometimes. Sometimes he'll get you 28. Sometimes mm-hmm. he'll get you 2 for 28. It's like, yo, you know what I mean? I mean, he's more consistent yeah. now, but mm-hmm. like you said, it gives that it'll be an interesting playoffs because I'm looking at the healthiest teams are probably Denver and Boston.
But see, here's the thing about Miami, and I'm gonna leave it alone after this. Miami is a troll regular season team. What they try to do is when you go there and play for them, and it's evident how they play, they try to get you to adapt to a singular style of play for the regular season. Sharing the ball, making the right defensive reads, understanding the sets. Then when they get to the playoffs, that's when you see that Spoelstra is a tactician and he starts running systems for guys. We don't see the Jimmy Butler offense in the regular season. That's why it's always a surprise in the playoffs. So all of the things that Terry Rozier did well in Charlotte that he's not getting the opportunity to do right now, watch come playoff time. All of these plays, we'll be able to go back and look at how Terry Rozier is scoring in Miami. If he's scoring well, and you'll see that all Spoelstra went and did was pull out whatever the Charlotte package was that made he's brilliant like that, man. He's brilliant like that. So just mm-hmm. be prepared for whatever version of Miami we see come playoff time. It's not going to resemble at all what we're seeing in the regular season. They are good for that. It's not a switch. It's a decision. Playoff basketball is what matters here in this city. Let's do it. Because they know with the way that they're constructed that them trying to go and get the number one seed in their conference, it doesn't make sense. It would break down. They would break down.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a certain type of team. Like what Boston is doing right now is, you know how when you go to the lot and your credit tells you, the dealer tells you can take anything off the lot you want. That's what Boston did this season. They went and got the best car they could get. When you got the best car you could get, you got to go fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've done, and that's the thing with Boston. They've done every iteration of their roster that you can think of with those two guys, with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, to try and win a championship. So with them, it really boils down to, it's hard to talk about Boston knowing that there's one singular goal, that they're the best team in the league, record-wise. The best team in their conference, record-wise. They are vulnerable, just like every other team in the league. Can a team do it for 7 games? Can the Knicks get at Boston for 7 games? Healthy?
I mean, as a Knicks fan, yeah, I would love to believe that, but I'd have to see how the Knicks gel together because everybody's all hurt. And we don't know, you know, on paper, that seems like a good matchup, but like, it's like, what's the reality? Like, what's the reality of that being a realistic thing when guys are out for with significant injuries? You know?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, I like the Knicks' chances to play Boston and to get far ahead, to get past. I mean, the thing about it is the Knicks, in my opinion, the Knicks can either get a first-round exit or they could be, you know, a Western Conference opponent. You know what I mean? Like Western Conference Finals opponent. Even and even doing something, I mean, saying the finals is a stretch, but the way they
are. Why not? Why?
No, but no. Well, no, I'm saying because, again, when you have a team that is such a that can lose in the first round and then possibly go to NBA Finals.
Okay, but let's just be as open-minded and fair as possible and using facts to back up the idea that it's possible. The Lakers went where last year as the 7th seed?
They went to the Western Conference Finals.
The Heat went where last year as the 8th seed?
They went to the – no, of course. No, anything is – okay, yes. Okay, let me take this back. Yes, healthy and if guys are clicking, yes. because in my opinion, the Knicks have a solid.
The Knicks have
a solid roster.
A better team. Their roster from 1 to 10 is better than Boston's. Boston is top heavy, and I would, now Boston is officially 7 deep, and that just means that they're 4 deep in the front court because they got Tillman and who's the other big and Horford. Those two come off the bench. Everybody else that comes off the bench for them, can't name them. I know there's Pritchard. I'm not disrespecting them. I'm not trying to be violating to anybody who is a Boston supporter who listens to us. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm just trying to point out they're top heavy. And when you're top heavy come playoff time, you're vulnerable.
Yeah, no, of course. And that's and I think that's the thing with the Knicks. They have a bench now. Now, that's the thing. Like I said, when they're clicking the Knicks definitely can be a team that could give a lot of teams a run for their money.
But I think the only team that I clearly would not favor the Knicks in a 7-game series against, healthy, is Milwaukee. Because y'all just don't have no answer. Really, nobody has an answer for Giannis. But the Knicks really don't have an answer for Giannis.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone else, with Tibbs and a defensive game plan, and Brunson able to play his era of playoff basketball, he's unguardable. He's unguardable in the playoffs. If you don't go and double him, you're screwed. Because he's going to cook. And I listen, I love Drew Holiday. One-on-one on the island for 40 minutes.
No,
Jalen? I seen the best of the best. I seen the best of the best. We've seen the best of the best. And that kid, Jalen, when he's cooking with the way that he plays basketball, he cannot be guarded because you don't know what to take from him.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. I, you said, my, that's my biggest thing with the Knicks is the health because there are they got too many significant injuries at this time. And that's the toughest thing about everything.
But I also want to revisit what I said before when it initially happened, and I just kind of alluded to it earlier. And what I mean when I said before, I mean in previous podcasts. If Embiid comes back and he's healthy, that is the sleeper.
I mean, he'll always be an X factor. I mean, you gotta you have
not an X factor. They are the sleeper because remember that team was top three in the East with him. And really the only team that got better since he's gotten hurt is the Knicks. Everyone else kind of really didn't make any moves. Okay, Milwaukee replaced the coach. Cleveland, what did they do?
They just,
The Pacers made some lateral moves, but it still didn't raise their ceiling. You know, Siakam is a better starting 3-4 man than what they had in Indiana. Cool. But he doesn't make them so much better than what they were before that they suddenly become a top five team in the East. Embiid returning to a roster that is holding on for dear life at the bottom of the conference or the bottom of the playoff race, he raises their floor back to the top four team in the conference immediately. He's that good. And Boston don't want nothing to do with him. That's why they went and got three bigs. Boston built themselves they only built themselves and conditioned themselves to what if we deal with Embiid. They kind of said, and I was waiting for you to kind of like acknowledge this, they kind of said, we're not really worried about anybody else. We could do this. But for Philly and maybe Cleveland, we need more bigs.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about Cleveland. To me, they're kind of like fool's gold. Like, because they have, they don't really have a bench, but they have the height and, you know, position players.
The thing with Cleveland is, remember, their best player is still Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
He goes on a heater in a series. Remember that year him and Devin Booker did it? In the year that I think they gave Houston a problem back when he was in Utah. Donovan's had some crazy playoff runs. So if he can get into that mode for a playoff run, then there's not really nothing the other team can do because he's going to score 40 four nights in a row. What are you going to do about that? That's his ability to raise their ceiling. Problem is, he hasn't proven he could do it for the entirety of a playoff run. So that's why you worry about a team like Cleveland, because when your best player is a Donovan Mitchell, you need guys who are going to get you extra possessions. And that's what they have in Mobley, who's a shot blocker and rebounder, and Jared Allen, who's a shot blocker and rebounder. So that's what makes them annoying. They're not really like a dangerous, you know, offensive threat, because remember, their best two players are Garland and Donovan Mitchell. Those two kind of like offset each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're both giving you points from pretty much the same areas on the court.
Yeah.
A different guy holding the ball. So
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. I don't really feel like the East is going to be some great playoff basketball. I feel like the matchups are more fairly spread out, but there is a big difference. Like, you would expect Boston to steamroll whoever is the seventh or eighth, as long as it's not Philadelphia with Embiid. If Embiid,
I would even say Miami.
Huh?
As long as it's not Miami or Philadelphia.
Yeah, I can say that. If Miami were to somehow fall into that position where they're facing Boston in the first round, I would expect that series to go long too. Agreed. But if you got Boston facing Indiana, Philadelphia without Embiid, or Chicago or Atlanta, you're expecting a 4-game sweep.
Mm.
5 games at the most, really? We're not giving Chicago a playoff game, are we?
Who?
Exactly. Chicago, exactly. Atlanta punted on the season, and they still can't. It's almost impossible for them to miss the play-in. That's how bad the rest of the East is, because Brooklyn is spiraling. Brooklyn can't catch them, and, you know, man, with that news that
okay. So how do you think, because I'm looking at the current seedings right now, you think that the Pacers have no chance with Boston?
In 7 games?
I'm asking.
No.
Okay.
No.
So basically, if it's not Miami or Philadelphia with
Embiid, Boston should win at least 5 to 6 games.
Okay.
I could give, because Carlisle's brilliant, I could give him.
He can get 2 games, more, definitely.
Right. I can give him getting 2 games on him.
And he's definitely got a young team.
And the way that Indiana plays, they share the ball, and Tyrese is a really good general. If he's healthy, because he's not healthy right now, even though he's playing.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lot of people that's not healthy.
So, and that's part of the reason why I don't really favor them, because Boston style, a lot of people don't realize the reason why Boston is so hard to beat in the regular season is because they make you cover so much ground. And in the regular season, the hardest thing to do is consistently cover a whole bunch of ground night to night. When you're able to lock in the playoffs and you get familiar with a team's tendencies, that space of recovery shrinks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Boston, with all the threes that they take and the fact that they do a lot of drive and kick to get those threes, that's a lot of rotate and recover, rotate and recover, rotate and recover, rotate and recover. You make a team rotate and recover 3 times in a possession, you're probably getting a good shot. And Boston will make you do that. They will make you switch sides of the floor multiple times and then take the best shot available, or dice you when you gamble and get themselves a layup. But in the playoffs, again, it looks like they're doing something really innovative. We do this every year with some team. And then we get to the playoffs and it's like, oh, how come that didn't work now? And everybody's acting like it's not going to happen to Boston. I would love to see that it doesn't, so that, you know, finally some team can prove otherwise, kind of like how Golden State did. But there's always kryptonite to the newest style of play. Ask Mike D'Antoni. We all thought 7 seconds or less was unbeatable till it got beat.
Yeah. And then it exposed certain things about it.
Right. We all thought the triangle was undefeatable. Phil Jackson could install that anywhere. Yeah. After he left the Lakers and didn't have 2 of the best players in the world on his team like he had in Chicago, too.
2 of the best players in NBA history.
Right. Twice.
Exactly.
You take them out of your offense, and how great is the offense now? Shut up. You see what I'm saying? So we doing this with this five-out Boston offense where everybody can shoot a three. Okay, bro. Okay. Oh, Jason Tatum is sacrificing his scoring so that everybody can – what is that, Evan? Like,
how long do you think that's going to last? You gonna think that's
no,
last
can I ask you something? Name me the Michael Jordan sacrifice season where it lets him win a title. Name that season. Name the Nikola Jokic sacrifice season that led to them winning the title. He played like how he is, and they won, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do with your best player.
Exactly. Everybody else stepped it up around
Same thing with Kobe and Shaq. Yo, Kobe, we know you want to take more shots. Shaq, the best goddamn player in the world. Give him the ball.org.
Mm-hmm.
You win. So now you're telling me that Jason Tatum taking five less shots a game so that other people can what? Look. No, I'm the biggest
not in the playoffs.
And I'm one of the biggest mental health problems. I don't work in playoffs, man. Bring out the predator and the prey. And I think that as that progresses, you'll see that because Alpha, so is Jaylen Brown. They'll look around and see guys who ain't used to doing it when the sneakers get tight and they're going to take more shots and do more Tatum things, more Jaylen Brown things. That's who they are. We've seen that in the losses that they've had and the team they've lost to. Oh, and then what's the answer? Oh, we let our guard down and we didn't play as hard. Because y'all capable of getting knocked into that boat. We watch Boston eat y'all food. I mean, Boston, we watch Miami eat y'all food. We watch Miami eat y'all
food.
That's
a fact.
And y'all ain't want to do nothing about it. Y'all ain't even trying to go to the principal. Y'all just sat there and watched them like, you ain't going to let me get no front. No. What about the milk? No milk.
That's crazy.
So until otherwise proven, and you know, Boston went out and beat the Warriors and they closed the door on the dynasty. Listen, man.
Please.
Listen,
you gotta do that stuff in the playoffs.
Right. Dynasties don't die in the regular season. Even when that team don't make the playoffs, you didn't kill the dynasty. They did. So what does it matter? Mm-hmm. They ain't good enough no more. By 60. Everybody, what we know, they ain't good. What does that say about y'all? Because Denver beat y'all. Right. So again, I'm in favor of seeing the best team win, but I don't know if that's Boston when it comes to the East. It's concerning me, and I didn't even speak about it because we've been real fair and like. You know, like, nice about it, but prepare the playoffs. Giannis, he fell on his tailbone that derailed this season. Chris Middleton, I don't even know if he's playing basketball yet.
Yo, I don't. That's what I was about to say. What happened to that? I don't think so. Honestly, I'd be shocked if he is. I haven't heard about that dude.
I'm on their injuries. Chris will remain on the sidelines for Friday's game against the Lakers. He's out. Giannis is day to day with Achilles tendonitis, which is a dangerous injury.
Yeah, that's a very dangerous injury.
But to the West, we haven't said much, but like the middle of the West is, I just. See an easy first round matchup for anybody, you know. If you're Denver, do you really want to play Phoenix in the first round? Phoenix could beat you.
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah, you said like
I pick Phoenix, but if there's a version of Phoenix,
it could be a more of a challenging matchup than. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because I mean, honestly, if I'm Denver, the only team that you could feel confident in. In that mix would be, you wouldn't mind playing the Mavericks, but Denver, let the Pelicans drop. You know what I mean? Because that's a team that I would not personally.
Nobody wants to play the Pelicans. You don't. You can't want to play them. You got CJ McCollum, who's playoff tested. You got Alvarado, who is a really annoying point of attack guard that you could bring off the bench to just really. You've got
Zion. Exactly.
Is essentially not guardable in the playoffs. Either he's not guardable or he's not playable, depending on how he's going to play. Because if you allow him to get to those spots and use his body to get him, and he gonna get his 27. You know, he gonna have them Charles Barkley games that we called him from when we first saw him. He's gonna have that where there's nothing you could do with him, and because you can't do anything with him, everybody else is good. And he's off of being. That's the thing. You're gonna sell a consistent that you don't realize he'll go out and give you 42. So you don't want Pellet healthy. Mm-hmm. You don't want them. Especially with all of the problems they had to deal with this year. You know, they got their full eight in the in-season tournament. Zion's got the whole world on his hands because of the nonsense that he got himself involved in. That's a team with an edge. You know, they haven't really been able to prove that they haven't been. So I do think that that first opponent, it's a problem. So I listen, everybody's big on the Clippers, but stop Zion.
Okay, but yeah, no, I mean not really. I mean
Zubac.
They're gonna have to. He's gonna have to play him. But I mean, the scary thing about the Clippers is you legit have three starters that can give you 30.
But I
and
the Clippers and we'll probably take enough shots. To Westbrook though.
Yeah, but Westbrook. Westbrook is hurt, so...
Right, so I move it down. I can see them, if they get the Pelicans, I favor the Pelicans. Off health.
I still don't. But for some reason, I personally just can't... I've never seen the Pelicans... There's something about the Pelicans, I don't see them winning a playoff season.
Right.
Course, but I just feel like they're missing... something from that team. And maybe it's the guys don't. I'd have to see them how they. Yeah, because they're not tested, but I gotta see some of their young guys like Herb Jones and Trey Murphy do something on the road. I just feel for some reason, I feel like those guys are gonna be great at home. Mm-hmm. When you get on the road, I feel like those guys are gonna be like maybe there might be too much for them. So, but again, that's like you said, but that comes with experience. But you know, when you're trying to be a first round matchup, do you feel like you can win? Hey, I need you to figure it out now. You can't wait till next season to talk about experience. Nah, we need you to figure it out and get.
Yeah, but I think this
about
the
second quarter, game one.
Yeah, I think this first round is really gonna be about watching which team loses at home first. And that's going to speak a lot because this is a playoff. I said these playoffs are going to be unique. So this is a playoff where home court advantage, you know, you lose a lot with it. But a lot of teams aren't really built to be locked in. Like, so looking at, so home in the West. Minnesota is 23-8. Oklahoma City is 24-6. Denver's 24-6. Two best home records in the conference. So basically, you go there, you don't expect to win. The Clippers are 21-8, which is a very good home record too. The Pelicans are 18-12 and 19-13. Away. And most of the best teams in the West are in that range. They all have about 13 road losses. So teams are comfortable everywhere this year. You let your guard down at home and your season could be over. You're not going to be able to. I think that up to Annie on when you get back to that other team's home court. They're going to be motivated to keep it because you know you control the series. Now, some of these younger teams, they may not really understand the magnitude of doing something like that does. So, for instance, beating the Clippers in game one, right, and still losing the series because they don't understand that first game upset, and it then plays out to be a series where, oh, we had to lose that game, snap out of it, and then we won the next four, which I don't think they would do against the Pelicans, but you know that type of thing. Whereas if you're Pelicans and you're down 2-0 and LA takes game three in your home court, series over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a wrap. That's a wrap.
Okay, but what about a team like the Suns who, I mean, they're not going to do it against Denver, but they're a team that they can go to.
Yeah, that's all I was supposed to say. Honestly, this is probably the one playoffs that once they, if you talk about, if any team goes down 2-0, I don't see any team being strong enough to make that a series. I mean, well, strong enough to come back and win the series. Because you're talking about...
Well, I think a lot of these series aren't going to matter until game three. Like we said, a lot of these teams are good at home, and a lot of these teams are good on the road. So once you lose home court advantage,
yeah,
your home court advantage, wherever, whatever part of the series that may be. So if you lose it in game one or two as the higher seed, then it could be tough sledding for you because now that team knows value in their home games because they can close it out at home. You might not be able to get it back. You know, there have been times where there have been times where teams have dropped the game and like I said, they won the next four or won three in a row, and then that kind of like steadied the ship. This may not be one of those type of years where you can afford to drop a game from either side.
You
especially
have, this,
if you're Minnesota or Oklahoma City.
Of course, but this is the year where you have to you have to sneak a road win early because you're not gonna get another chance if you don't. Like you gotta come back to if you're a lower seed, you have to this to me in this playoffs, you have to come back at an even matchup to make it even feel like it's a possibility that you can do something. But I don't like you
so
said, I don't
talking,
see any team.
Now you're talking about game five being critical in a lot of these series.
Oh no, I think all of them have to be.
Oh yeah, yeah, games 1, 3, and 5 are definitely going to be critical. Games, you know, the even number games will become important if there's an upset prior to them. So if it's 1-0 going into to the second game, then you know, I don't know how critical that is. The home team got to win, and the road team is hoping to win. If it goes into game three tied at 1, you know, we in some shit. So
yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I don't have any favorites. Like, I felt like last year, it was easy to say, yeah, I could win. And they did. As these last 20 or so games play out, worrying about where the standings are really doesn't matter. Except for if you're in the East, I mean,
worry about Orlando.
Like I said, I think New York's more concerned about health than anything else. I think no, but again, you're talking about experience, you know. And I think Orlando did play them very well in the regular season. But again, New York, my thing is New York is issue is going to be health. How guys respond to being out.
So
and
who are the critical
back,
health
readjusting?
Y'all need. Is back. That's a given.
Yeah, well, we need Brunson too.
And so y'all need Jacquard too. I think.
And we need, OG.
Y'all definitely need OG. So wow. I keep forgetting how many injuries y'all got. It is insane.
It's four of the starters. So you even got Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson.
I wanted to ask
OG.
You about that. Does Mitchell Robinson get his spot back this season? There's been talk.
I don't see why. Actually, I think because Hartenstein has done a great job, and he's also, I think he's making.
He's due for a contract. You know that, right?
Yeah, well, I think that he's going to make the Knicks want to seriously consider getting moving Mitchell Robinson. Because
Mitchell Robinson's on a 4-year, $60 million deal, which is a great deal.
I believe so.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, no, I know.
It is.
Especially,
it's a great deal.
But I think for the Knicks is, are looking at from his skill set, his availability, we can't pay the same two players that the same two players that amount of money.
But is Hartenstein Hartenstein is mm-hmm. he truly a full-time NBA starter for a team competing for the championship? Is that legitimately what you paint him as versus Mitchell Robinson?
No. See, that's tricky because he fits the role that he has right now very well. And I think that could be the issue if depending on, and he always seems.
Is he a better defender than Mitchell Robinson?
No. But see, that's crazy because he doesn't. See, that's a tough thing because I think Mitchell Robinson can play better in the interior post. But when you're talking about switching out or also sometimes staying out of foul trouble, I feel like Hartenstein does a better job of not – because it feels like Mitchell Robinson, at least every few games, he's always in foul trouble. He has two, or he might be sitting because he, you know, he just has – he has some type of something going on.
All right, so we're not going to run long. This is my thing. Yeah. I think the Knicks need to lowball Hartenstein. I think if they have his rights, I think you don't – too big of a contract. And you should
I don't know.
I think
I'm thinking
– both guys.
Yeah, depending on how Hartenstein finishes the season. I think
the season thing. This is the thing. If OJ don't rape you when it's time for his deal, because maybe
OG.
OG don't rape you.
Oh yeah.
If he don't rape you and you have a fair enough amount of money, okay. Because what we're looking at now is it's likely to get at least $10 million a year, right?
Yeah, so if you give him $30 million, mm-hmm. I mean, I think
get rid of Mitchell Robinson now.
I think you consider it. I don't know if you rush to do it, but I think you consider. I think you definitely take some phone calls.
And then what do you
because for what they're That's
draft
the whole point.
Capital,
Well, only because Mitchell Robinson, I feel like. Because
who's your backup big now? If you start Hartenstein and you get rid of Robinson, who's the backup behind Hartenstein now?
The Knicks sometimes play Princess Ochoa. They play him less than five sometimes, or they play. Heck, unfortunately, they've been playing Sims. So they haven't. They don't have anybody. Jericho Sims. So they really don't have anybody. So that's the thing too. I think Mitchell Robinson. If it was up to me, I would keep both. I would just have one. You know, pay less money. And of course you can't pay more than Mitchell Robinson. But I feel like he's playing himself into a contract. Whereas Mitchell Robinson, of course, he has been on the bench, and you can't tell what he's got going on.
I think what the Knicks should do, if they're able to, is give him one of those escalating deals where you give him 8 year 1, give him 10 year 2, 13 year 3, or whatever you can do to, like, make the average amount of the deal average out to, I don't know how you do it, but you got to give them one of those deals where it's a bargain at the beginning and it starts to hurt you at the end, rather than you have to give him upfront, pay me like you owe me because I've been doing this for 5 years in the league. Like, I felt like Mitchell Robinson, even with all things considered, he earned that 4-year, $60 million deal. We forget how good he was. We forget that he is the perennial league leader in offensive rebounds per game.
No, he definitely does his thing.
And he's also top 10 in shot block. He's also top 10 at field goal percentage, defended within 5 feet of the rim. There's a lot of things that Mitchell Robinson brings to the table. Is he perfect? Absolutely not.
No, of course.
So I think a lot of that gets lost in the fact that, like you said, availability. You know, we point at guys and their availability and not being able to do something, but Julius Randle wasn't healthy last year in the playoffs. He was out there playing on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt y'all. It didn't help y'all, it hurt y'all. So, you know, we got to point the gun evenly when we talk about people. Just because you was out there doesn't mean you was good. So, yeah, you available, but you stink. So I do think that speaks to something, too. Everybody's saying, what, Mitchell Robinson got his food ate in what? Against Miami, right? Miami ate his food? That's the prevailing thought because, you know, that's who y'all lost to in the second round. But everybody's saying that he was dominant in that first round against Cleveland, but then he, quote-unquote, disappeared against Miami. And to me, I don't know what that means because Mitchell Robinson, I don't even know if he's ever averaged more than 10 points a game. So does that mean he wasn't rebounding against Miami? What are they saying?
I definitely would have to figure out those stats because, but again, for a guy that's averaging 13 and possibly 12, if he goes down to in the playoffs, 10 and 8, yeah, because it could be considerable to certain teams. Say, well, role players.
Scoring tends to go down in the playoffs as high usage starters' volume goes up. So I'm never really surprised when, like, Mitchell Robinson, Nurkic, KCP, those type of guys, they don't wind up having these. They may randomly have a big playoff game, but usually they have that big playoff game because the other team's stupid ass game plan forces that guy to score. Remember last year, everybody was like, oh, well, we're tired of everybody else killing us. The Lakers did this. We're tired of everybody else killing us. We'll make Aaron Gordon do it. And then Aaron go off and have 28 and 12. You get what I'm trying to say? Like teams tilt their game plans and it makes role players look better than, not better than what they are, but it emphasizes how good they can be simply because they work so hard to take everything else away. And I see that with the Knicks. You know what I'm saying? So you get everybody back healthy. You know what the first two game plans are going to be. All right, once Julius gets the ball and he turns his back and can't see over his right shoulder, send the double team.
Oh, man.
All right, once Jalen Brunson decides that he wants to dribble the ball to the right-hand side of the court and call a play where it's going to initiate him going left, we're going to high trap him so that all he has is to be he's either going to have to split or he's going to call a timeout. These are things that I've watched now. I know it doesn't seem like I watch a lot of Knicks basketball, but I see the vulnerabilities. These are what those playoff teams are going to do. And then when he does read that play, who's going to get the ball? The Bogdanoviches, the Harts, the DiVincenzos, and those guys, the Ananobis, those guys have to knock down those shots. Have to. So that's when you point to them and say, you fell off. But Mitchell Robinson is only going to score within 2 feet of the rim. Same thing with Hartenstein. It's not like he's out there hitting mid-range jumpers. That's the thing that's been bothering me about it. Everybody's looking at Hartenstein, oh, he's better. No, he's healthier. And I think that what that element of what Mitchell Robinson brings gets forgotten because he hasn't, like you said, had the biggest moments at the right times. So it's interesting to see. I do hope that he's able to come back healthy because I feel like you get a hell of a player back even if you're not going to start him. You got Mitchell Robinson as your backup center. That means that your team can't score in the interior for another 10 minutes. And again, you put a team like that that takes away the rim, which is where Boston likes to go to generate their threes against Boston, and what do you think happens?
Yes.
Yeah, now you go to ISO ball. And does ISO ball beat the Knicks? No. You don't beat Thibodeau one-on-one.
No, you definitely don't.
So it's going to be interesting to see. I feel like the East has some tilts to it. It's interesting. I feel like there are two kryptonites that Boston, I feel like they prepared for a couple of teams, but they're not fully prepared for everybody. I don't think they're best prepared to handle y'all healthy, and I don't think they're prepared, or any team really can be prepared to deal with. The only team that I could see being able to, like, not really be too phased by
New York.
Philadelphia healthy is Milwaukee. Because they kind of like offset each other. They have big dominant guys who are literally just going to be running up the scoreboard. So they kind of cancel each other.
True.
But
true,
every other team, every other team doesn't have that one guy where it's just like, yo, inside of 10 feet, there's nothing to do with. So I feel like that's what gives all of these other teams a puncher's chance against a team like Boston. So it's going to be interesting to see as the rest of the season plays out. Boston's on pace to, they're going to win 60-plus games.
Yeah, that's crazy. But again, they're not really dealing with any injuries or anything crazy right now. They're clicking.
That's why I say that their vulnerability is super high, because of their five players that play, one of them has a perennial injury history. He's been injured this year back and off and on.
Oh,
and
that's Kristaps. Yeah.
Bezingas. And that's why they went and got three big men, so that they could absorb the potential of a big man not being available to play. But Kristaps not healthy is a different player. We saw that when he was in Dallas. And we also see that what he brings to Boston that makes their front line, their top five players so dangerous, is the fact that he does shoot the three. So if you all of a sudden can get him off the court and instead you're closing out to Al Horford or Xavier Tillman, that's a lot short of a closeout.
True.
You know, it's one thing to close out the Kristaps, who was standing at the top of the key 28 feet out. He's not even at the three-point line. He's a couple feet behind it. And he's 7'3".
Crazy.
So what are you really doing to affect that shot? Nothing. Uh-uh. But if he's not available, you don't have to worry about that. That's a whole dimension of your defense that you don't have to account for. So, again, I know I've been rambling long, but I just felt like those are some points that we definitely wanted to talk about as we start to accelerate towards the playoffs. I realize we still got time left in the calendar. So are there any other issues that you wanted to bring up? Is there any other stories that we didn't mention? I mean, first of all, as I do this, congratulations to LeBron on, you know, crossing the 40K threshold. First player to ever do it in basketball history. You know what I mean? That man deserves flowers beyond flowers beyond flowers for all that he's done for the sport of basketball. You know, I don't want to sit up there and go in, you know, too much further than that, but I definitely want to make sure that we acknowledge that. But as you look at the rest of this regular season, you know, there were players that we thought were going to be impactful. We thought Chicago was going to be moving parts. Nobody in Chicago got moved.
That was crazy. Oh, but, unfortunately, your man is out for the season.
Oh, yeah. I was waiting for you to bring it up.
I'm just saying.
Scam Simmons?
Yeah. Your man, Scam. Been scamming. Yeah,
and I think he had one more season or two more seasons.
I think he has two. I thought for some reason. Oh, maybe it might be next year's expiring. You better get it together.
I mean, we all know that if any team is willing to give him a contract. Sorry. If any team is willing to give him max money after him playing only one season, you know. I mean high level money. So, yeah, he's got one more season at 40. He's unrestricted in the 2025-26 season. So he's got one more year. He's one more year on the Nets payroll. But I do wish him a healthy recovery. I am a fan of his talent. You know, I do like to see guys who demonstrate the all-around abilities that he had have an opportunity to fail healthy. You know, shout-out to Isaiah Thomas on getting a G League deal. He's 35 years old, but he's still fighting to get an opportunity to get back to the league, and I want nothing but the best for him. So,
you talk about IT, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a fact. Yeah. Salute him. Always trying to make it happen, man. I mean, you got to commend people that are trying their best to make things happen, and then unfortunately, getting in a situation where injuries is the reason why they lost their, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you know we saw what he was able to do with Boston, and we saw that what he was, you know, in line for when that happened, and then you saw how that injury, you know, it was a devastating injury at the, you know, just at the inopportune time, messed up a lot of things for him, you know, and then also remember he was also battling with the loss of his sister, you know, so that's a whole mental, that's a whole traumatic situation. Now you have to overcome that. Or do your best to process that, but then also have to do your best to process trying to get back into the NBA, which at his age and his size, and kind of his strength, the NBA was frowning upon that. You know, teams were not necessarily looking at it like, okay, we're going to bring him in. So the fact that he can have this opportunity to go to the G League and make things happen, man, all more power, man. More power for him. Like I said, they always root for him, man. Anybody left-handed, always root for left-handed players. But definitely
factory, no retail. That's why I had to go from one disappointing lefty to one who brought us a lot of inspiration.
Oh, yeah, but I thought you – that's right. I forgot you, man. Oh, she's okay, got you. All right, I got you. I follow you. I ain't gonna lie, I thought Scam Simmons was right-handed. I don't think he know what he wanted because he don't shoot jumpers, so I'd never know. I ain't gonna lie. So.
Wow,
Scam Simmons, I thought he was right-handed.
You really try to kick him off the left-handed? Wow,
I thought because he never shoot lefty.
You try to throw him off the bus?
Yo, he don't shoot bus lefty.
Bus ain't even parked, bro.
Show me the left-handed jump shot. All right, there you go. See?
In an NBA game?
He been in the league 7 years.
In an NBA game? I can show you that left-handed jumper he missed when he was doing that outdoor demo for Brooklyn. Mm-mm. Remember he was out there? And, yeah, that went viral. That left-handed air ball.
That was crazy. Man, Scam Simmons, B.
Like, damn. We know you had a problem, but you really don't be outside.
Wow. That's crazy.
You really don't be outside, Ben Simmons. Like, how you really don't be outside in basketball?
Yo, your man. That's trying to tell you, that's your man,
insane.
Though.
That is insane. But yeah, let me go back to these standings and see what else that we could discuss. I mean, I didn't really get a full scope on what exactly going on across the counts. I didn't know it's a left meniscus injury, but undergoing tests is what it says. Damn, my man Johnson is out from the Hawks. Yo, shout out to him. Johnson from the Hawks.
Oh, Jalen Johnson?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, he just beat the Knicks.
When today?
No, the other like a couple of nights ago. He was definitely one of the reasons why the Knicks ended up losing. He was doing his thing. Mm. Young dude, because he play for UNC? Or Duke?
No, he went to Duke.
Duke.
Like, left after a year thinking he was hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now he's starting to come into the situation. Yeah.
He still wound up being a first-round pick, but it was like nobody knew exactly what he was good at other than being really athletic.
Yes. I can see that.
And he's got like – he's like another John Collins. But he doesn't try to play like the four. He's shooting jumpers, so – he's more of a three because he actually defends, you know, like with his feet, so he can move around. And that's, I mean, you saw it. You saw it. He's a 3-4, whereas Collins was trying to be like a 4-5, and Collins is only 6'8, 6'9. So it's like you get to move that position down. Because I was wondering, and remember, I said this too. I was like, yo, they threw the one guy that Trae Young could count on to throw alley-oops to away. And Trae Young is one of those people with like 60 something percent of his assists.
Mm-hmm.
We're alley-oops. So it's like, you take away the guy that can receive most of the passes he's used to throwing. What are you going to do in return is this guy. So, yeah, I mean, the Hawks situation, that's something to talk about in the future because I don't know if Trae Young being in Atlanta or – I mean, guys are about to get moved, but we'll get to that when that story plays itself out because, again, Atlanta is parked in the 10th seed even though they're not trying to compete. I don't want to say that. They're not trying to compete. They don't have the best team available to compete. Trae Young is out. I think Okongwu is out. I don't even know if Capella's been healthy. Like, who played against y'all? On the Hawks, when they beat y'all?
Murray played. Bay played. Sadiq Bay.
Oh, Sadiq. Okay, shout out to Sadiq Bay.
Who else? Johnson. And then a couple other like sneaky players that I was like, they had some center they had, a power forward dude, that I think he was averaging like 3 points for the season. And all of a sudden he had like 11.
Is that Bruno Fernando?
Yeah, Fernando. That's right. That's his name. Yeah.
I know guys on the Hawks roster. Listen, you telling me that was the dude that was giving y'all problems? See, the Knicks ain't healthy.
Exactly. That's the whole point. you don't have
the Westchester Knicks.
Yo, son. But I think honestly, with this is helping some of the role players build more confidence. So when that time does come and those guys get in the game, they're trying to apply that pressure, which you need. Because
I think that's beautiful, because here's the truth to how that statement can help and hurt you at the same time. Over the short term, it's going to help the Knicks players because they're going to go back to secondary roles. And the perfect example of that is Mikal Bridges. Because of all that time he spent being, you know, a deferring guy, when he got an opportunity to, you know, get max value, he was able to step into it, but he wasn't able to sustain it because he's not that type of talent. So these guys will get to understanding what that level is to be like, all right, we're going against the second unit, but we just got washed by the first unit when we had to be starters. So now we know what that level of play is, and you can kind of raise your level of play to meet it, like you're saying. So I agree with you. Those guys should have a level of experience that when the time comes and they go back into their secondary roles, but they're not intimidated by no situation that they go out in front of.
But the only problem with that is something that is kind of like the elephant in the room is how Tibbs plays his rotation for the playoffs.
Well, Tibbs got to play 9 guys this year.
Again, this is Tibbs.
I said 9. Oh, let me take that back. He's got to play 8. He always plays 8 anyway. I think he played 7 last year.
Yeah, but he plays 8, and those 3 off the bench sometimes don't get any minutes. But the reality is, no, he can play. He can play 8, definitely for sure.
Last year it was 8, right? Because it was Josh Hart didn't start, right?
No, Hart didn't start because RJ there, and you had Grimes. Grimes. It was Grimes, Brunson, RJ, Randall, and Robinson. And then you had Hart and Quickly off the bench.
And that was essentially it.
Yeah. And then, but now this year.
Y'all went 70.
Yeah. So exactly. We're 8. Yeah. Because now we have.
But then again, this is Tibbs.
You could go.
Y'all still don't play Fournier. How do y'all still have him? How do y'all?
No, we don't have Fournier. We got rid of Fournier.
Oh, that's right. Y'all got rid of Fournier so y'all can get.
So we can get Burks. We can get Burks and Bogdanovic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that becomes that's a real thing because you brought those guys over to play.
Wait. So let me guess. Did Tibbs start Burks?
Mm-mm. No, he started.
Love starting Burks.
Oh yeah, he did. No, but he started McBride.
He started McBride. Interesting. Okay. I have to see that.
He has.
You have to. You started Burks at the ones.
I don't think Burks because
it was two years ago.
But the thing why he started Deuce McBride is because the night when Jalen Brunson got hurt, McBride got in the game and he had played the entire rest of the game, but he had like 18 points and he played a steady hand against a better Cleveland team, even though they were down Donovan Mitchell. They still had the rest of their players, and he stepped up. So the following time they play, when you play the Hawks, you're going to play McBride. You're not going to skip over McBride and go to Burks because this so far from Burks has been, as this time around with the Knicks, has not been as strong. So if I got a guy who just came in the game before against a top four opponent and gave me about 18 points or so, yeah, I'm going to play him. And, you know, again, Tibbs with these rotations. If he can let guys play 50 minutes a game in a regulation game, he'll do it.
Yeah, Tibbs will do that. Tibbs definitely would have been dangerous if he had been a slave master. That's all I'm going to say.
Damn. Jesus Christ.
he'd have been dangerous on the plantation. But with that being said, we gonna go ahead and wrap up. Oh man, I can see the memes. That's why I'm dying laughing right now. I can just see somebody just taking Tibbs and just put him on the Django. But who would be Samuel L. Jackson? That would probably be That would probably be your boy Randall.
Nah, son.
Because y'all was so mad. It's like, yo, Randall can't do no wrong, man. He be disrespecting Tibbs. Tibbs don't do nothing about it, man. He's scared of him, man. Oh, man. All right, y'all. On that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode of Views from the Clutch. As always, we like to say thank you and appreciate our supporters, listeners, and subscribers. You can do so by supporting us, by following us on any of the podcasting platforms we're hosted on, which is all of them, Apple Music, Spotify, to say the least. You can reach us at gmail.com. Well, you can reach us at viewsfromtheclutch@gmail.com. And you can follow us on social media at Views from the Clutch on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah, that joke got me crying. I'm sorry. On that note, I'm going to say peace.
Peace.